knew somehow that if I didn't get a hold of myself, I would drift like this, forever. Not expecting to get a response, I said, hey. The guy stirred, turned. For just a moment, I thought I saw his eyes meet mine, but then his gaze swept around the room, seeing nothing. The man apparently decided he had imagined it and turned back to his monitor. The room was full of people at various machines. It was obvious no one could see me. I was here, but I was not here. I looked down, and sure enough, could not see my feet. My feet, I knew, were still in a trailer in Undisclosed, on a Saturday afternoon. I focused all my concentration on getting back there, to that spot, to that time, to my body. And in a blink, I was back in the trailer, on the floor. Pain in my face, stench of shit on my pant legs. I breathed a sigh of relief, tried to remember what I had been doing, when Morgan Freeman stepped through the door and stopped cold at the sight of me. Damn, I suck at this. I looked up, climbed awkwardly to my feet with my hand on my bloody face, my pants stinking of Robert Marley's feces. The detective looked me over. He had two red plastic gasoline cans with him. He's gonna burn this place down, I realized with perfect clarity. And he's gonna burn me with it. Morgan sat the gas cans at his feet, then lit a cigarette. He smoked in silence for a moment, looking off into space as if he had suddenly forgotten I was there. So, I began, figuring I would remind him, I suppose you're wondering why I'm here. He shook his head slightly.
Same as everybody. You're trying to figure out what, in the name of Elvis, is going on. Everybody except me. Me? I don't even want to know no more. I bet you're wondering what I'm doing here with these gas cans.
I think I know, and I don't think Robert's landlord would approve at all. He studied my bleeding face, then reached into his pocket and handed me a handkerchief. I pressed it to my cheek. Thank you. I fell. On a... drill.
You believe in hell, Mr. Wong?
5 seconds of confused silence, then. Yeah, I guess.
Why?
He asked.
Why do you believe in hell?
Because it's the opposite of what I want to believe. He nodded slowly, as if this answer seemed to satisfy him. He picked up one gas can, unscrewed the cap, and started splashing the orange liquid around the living room. I watched him for a moment, then took a tentative step toward the door. In a blur of movement, Morgan turned, whipped his hand out of his pocket. A revolver was now aimed right at my face.
You leaving already?
My mind was still buzzing, and suddenly I saw a flash from Morgan's memory, something too bizarre to grasp. It was a scene from this morning. Here, at this very trailer. Blood. And screaming. All that screaming. What the hell did you see here, Morgan? Then I had another vision, of walls erupting in flame around me. I put my hands up in surrender, and he nodded down toward the other gas can. He said,
Help me.
I'd be glad to, but first I want you to tell me what happened to John. You know the other guy you were interrogating?
I figured he was with you.
Me? Didn't he, you know, die?
Sure did. He was in the interview room and Mike Dunlow was asking him the same questions I was asking you. And your guy was muttering responses like he's half asleep. He keeps saying we gotta let you and him go, that you gotta get to Vegas, else it's the end of the world.
Las Vegas again. What the fuck is in Vegas?
So finally Dunlow says to him, Look, we got dead or missing kids here, and we're gonna find out what we need to know, so you're staying in this room until I'm satisfied. Or you die of old age. Your boy, when he hears that, he falls over dead. Just like that.
Yeah, that sounds like John.
And now he's gone. Got a call from the hospital. It's just an empty bed where he was. They figured he skipped out on paying the bill.
That also sounds like John. I picked up the gas can and removed the cap. Morgan put his gun away. I soaked the couch.
You know a kid named Justin White, Mr. Wong? High school kid?
No, you asked me that back at the police station. He's one of the missing, right?
No, you know him. Think.
Morgan said.
Drives a cherry red 65 Mustang.
Ah. I didn't know the man, but I knew the car. This was the baby-faced blonde kid I saw Jennifer making out with at the party. I know what he looks like, that's it.
He's the guy who called in the... that whatever happened here. Now this is how my day started. Just so you understand me, so you understand my state of mind, okay? Kid calls 911 in a panic, hysterical, talking about a dead body. This was about 4 in the morning. I happened to be 2 blocks away at the time, so I race over and I'm the first one there, and from outside I hear screaming. And there's people running away, kids peeling out in their cars. Party went bad and all that. He stopped flashing the gasoline and then sat the can on the ground. He stared off into space for a moment. He sucked some inspiration from his cigarette butt and spoke again. I go up to the door. I tell him it's the cops. I go inside, and I see...
I was there. Just like that.
I was still in the trailer, standing in the exact same spot. Only the pain in my cheek was gone. And horrible rap reggae hammered my ears from a floor stereo across the room. The light was different, and a glance toward a window told me it was night. I looked down and again couldn't see my feet. Here, but not here. It was like somebody had hit rewind on the trailer, the playback from about 12 hours ago. The room was full of people. I spotted the faces of Jennifer Lopez and Justin White in the crowd. I scanned the room for John, but there was no sign of him. But of course he would have been gone by now, back at his apartment, having a rough night of his own. The music thumped, but nobody was moving or talking. All were standing frozen, their eyes fixed on a spot to my right. Holy shit, the song was bad. It was Informer by the white reggae rapper Snow. Informer, you no say daddy me snow blah blah blah. I turned to see what was so compelling as to draw a room full of frozen stares. Robert, the pseudo-Jamaican's body, was curled up on the floor, twitching. He was saying, I'm okay, man, just give me a minute now, I'm feeling better. His words would have been more reassuring if his head hadn't been separated from his body, laying a good 2 feet away from the shredded pink stump of his neck. The disembodied head kept offering reassurances, the head scooting around the floor slightly with each movement of his jaw. One of Robert's arms came free at the shoulder, landing softly on the carpet. I realized with revulsion something was wriggling in the exposed guts, like worms. Someone screamed. The party turned into a stampede. I jumped as some girl ran through me, passing through where my body should be. Everybody was circling around Robert, trying to get to the door while avoiding the infested, oozing mess, and holy shit, is this song bad? It was like the singer was stabbing my ear with a dagger made of dried turds. The music stopped abruptly. Somebody had knocked over the stereo. I saw Justin in the corner screaming into his cell phone.
I said he's dead, and he's talking, but he's also dead. Just fucking get down here and you can see for yourself.
I watched the partygoers spill out the door, but never saw Jennifer pass me. I turned and saw the back of somebody heading the opposite way down the hall. No door down there, dumbass. But there is a basement under the bathroom. There was a sound like a garbage bag of pudding dropped off a tall building onto a sidewalk. Robert had erupted, chunks slapping off the walls in every direction. Justin let the phone fall from his hand. His mouth hung open. The room had emptied. Now just him and the pink pile of what was left of the Rastafarian drug dealer, together, in total silence. A single white insect appeared. It circled above the wet wreckage of Robert's former body. A white streak, creating the faintest buzz in the silent room. The insect was joined by another, then 2 more. The sound grew, a high-pitched noise somewhere between the chattering of angry squirrels and the screech of locusts. Dozens now. Each time I blinked, the swarm doubled in size. The bugs were long, like worms, and flew horizontally. Too many to count now, a swirling cloud above the spilled flesh. I wanted out of this room. Out of this town, off this planet. I had no means to move. It was the nightmare we've had 1,000 times, a horror we can't run from because the horror has swallowed us whole. The sound grew with the swarm. I could feel it. It had a gut-level power like the pulse of John's music at the party last night. Then, in unison, the white swarm flew toward Justin. He screamed. The door burst open. I blinked and saw Morgan in front of me. The stench of gasoline flooded my sinuses. Back again.
I come through the door, and this kid, Justin, he's on his hands and knees and just wailing. And I think he's been stabbed in the gut, but I look closer. And he's got something on him. All over him.
his arms, and his face. Morgan left the cigarette in his mouth as he spoke, the paper burning away, leaving a quarter inch of ash dangling off the end. Gasoline dripped off the wallpaper around me.
It looks like thick hairs. All over 'em, he said. White. Maybe like pipe cleaners, or little twisted bits of fishing line. And they're on his eyelids, and ears, and neck, and arms, and this guy is screaming, on his hands and knees, just shrieking like a little kid. And I see these things in the air, too, buzzing around him.
A half inch of ash hanging off his cigarette now. My eyes moved from it to the gasoline-soaked floor at his feet.
And man, I am frozen there, in the doorway. I mean, I look over, and on one side of the room I got a guy sprayed all over the walls like he stepped on a landmine. And then there's this. And I should try to render some assistance, but I don't want to touch him. I don't want whatever's on him, on me.
Morgan's words trailed off. He looked down at his own hands, as if to make absolutely sure they were clean. The long hunk of ash fell off of his cigarette onto the wet carpet below. It went out with a soft hiss. Morgan said,
"Then I did what I shouldn't have done. I ran back out to my car and called for the ambulance. I mean, it's already on the way, and I should have stayed in and, I don't know, found a can of bug spray or something, or dragged the guy off into the shower and washed these things off him, but I couldn't. I couldn't make myself because of the way the guy was screaming. But not just that. Bugs. Even biting bugs I'll handle if I got to, but I could—"
He paused, testing what he was about to say in his own head.
"I could hear them. Inside me. Do you understand?"
I didn't, but found myself unable to speak. He opened a closet, doused the contents with gas.
"So I go to the car, and I call it in, and I'm real vague about what's going on, okay? I got a can of mace in the car, and I grab it, and I head back inside, and I'm thinking I should call a hazmat team. Guys who come in and, I don't know, seal this place off. Disinfect it. But I gotta try to help this guy first, and I rush back inside, and he's fine. Just like that. He's standing there fixing his hair, and there's no sign of these things nowhere, the bugs or whatever. And this kid, Justin, he starts talking like normal, like I just got there."
I went down to the bedroom, threw open the door, and without looking in, tossed in the half-full gas can. I shut the door behind me. Morgan saw me, smiled.
"Yeah, you saw that. That painting. That's messed up, ain't it? Ain't no man who could do that. And I tell you what, you stay in there long enough, that mural gets inside your head. The dude that was taking pictures of the crime scene, he went in there for half an hour. He had to be dragged out, and he was crying. Like a little baby."
I said nothing. He went on.
"So the ambulance gets here, and the kid says he's fine. But I put him in it anyway. Told the guys the kid maybe had something in his blood that could kill him any second. I mean, I know this kid is infested, I guess. And I want to know what this stuff is, but I never found out because the kid never arrived at the hospital. That ambulance took off from here with sirens and lights, and it's going to St. John's, which is just 10 minutes away. Ambulance crew shows up there 45 minutes later, laughing and joking and carrying fast food cups, and the kid is nowhere in sight. They ask the two guys what happened, and they got no idea what anybody's talking about, no memory of any of it. Nobody's heard from the kid since, and when they go back out to the garage, they find the effing ambulance is gone. They still ain't found it. So, do you understand the kind of day I'm having?"
I wiped my cheek with the handkerchief, now deep red and sticky. My hands stank of fuel. I tried to process all this, still studying the carpet, wondering if maybe there wasn't a swarm of alien bugs zipping around under the subfloor. "So," I said, "can you, hear anything right now? Like they're still hanging around in here?"
"Not since I got back."
"But you're gonna burn the place down just to make sure."
"That's right."
"And you're not gonna let me go?" He was silent for a moment, then said,
"Those things that were on the guy? I've been describing them like they were bugs, or worms or something, you know, something you've seen before. But when they flew, I had one fly right across my face, okay, and they didn't have, like, wings or anything. They had this little row of bristles spiraling down their length, like a barbershop pole. They sort of twisted through the air like that, headlong, a corkscrew motion, and the ones that were on the guy, on his skin, that's what they were doing, I think, turning and drilling themselves into him. You understand?
You don't think they were from this world.
You said it, I didn't. I said I heard them, it's like a chittering, I guess. You hear it. You don't hear it, really, but you just get the sound in the middle of your head, like an itch. It's not so much like a swarm of bees, but more like a crowd. A crowd at a concert, because you can pick out words and... I say it out loud and it sounds insane. But you can hear them talking to each other, coordinating. And more than that, you can hear their hate. Okay? I want you to understand this. I want you to understand what I'm about to do.
I think I do. The survival part of my brain was scrambling for a plan to get the cop's gun, or at least get away from him. But in my current clarity of mind, I realized the certainty of it all. The man was going to shoot me and leave me here, no matter what I did. I was just waiting for it now. An odd feeling.
So,
he said, a kind of slow panic creeping into his eyes.
You understand my mood. You understand why I'm out committing felonies today. There are dark things happening, and I got the real lonely feeling like I'm the only one who knows, the only one who can do anything about it.
Morgan moved toward the door, blocking my exit. He set the gas can down, almost empty now, and gestured to it.
Pick it up, and toss it out the door. In the yard.
I hesitated. The detective put his gun on me again. I did as he asked. He pulled out his lighter once more, and, holding it in one hand and his revolver in the other, ignited it. The gasoline fumes burned my nose now, and I was getting lightheaded. Standing there, a little yellow flame flickering in his hand, he said,
You know, everybody's got a ghost story, or a UFO story, or a Bigfoot story, or an ESP story. Sit around a campfire late at night, and you won't find one janitor who ain't seen a glowing old lady roaming the halls in the middle of the night, or maybe a hunter who's seen a pair of leathery wings flapping out of a tree, something way too big to be a bat. Or just something simple, like a little kid at the store who goes around the corner and disappears into thin air a second later. And nobody thinks it's real because they figure nobody else saw it. But everybody's got their story. Everybody.
He gazed into the lighter flame as he spoke, as if mesmerized. His gun was pointed at the floor, and with a soft double click, his thumb pulled back the hammer, as if on its own.
Now, what I think, he said to his lighter, I think all that stuff is both real and not real at the same time. And I think the people who see it and the people who don't are both right. They're just like two different radios switched to different stations. Now, I ain't no Star Trek fan, and I don't know about other dimensions and all that. But I am an old Catholic, and I do believe in hell. I believe it ain't just rapists and murderers down there. I believe it's demons, and worms, and vile things that wouldn't make no sense to you if you saw them. It's the grease trap of the universe. And I think somehow, through some chemistry or magic or some voodoo, that faux Jamaican SOB opened the door into hell itself. He became the door.
I nodded, opened my mouth to say something, then closed it again.
And me,
he said, nodding to himself.
I intend to close it.
He raised his gun and shot me in the heart. I woke up in hell. Darkness and pain, time standing still. No wailing, though. I was sure hell would have wailing. A creak, a floorboard, and then a flumph sound, like a lit gas grill. I blacked out. I came back. How much time had passed? I smelled smoke, was sure I was in hell this time. Or was I dreaming? I forced my eyes open, my nose filled with an acidic itch. I was disappointed to find hell had a cheap tiled ceiling, some browned with water damage. My chest hurt, stung. I was shocked to find I still had an arm and could move it. I felt a wet patch right in the middle of my shirt, winced with the pain. I was cold all over, and vaguely realized I was in shock. I thought of Frank Wambaugh. Frank worked on the Worthington Munitions production line in Plano, Texas, for 11 years. The company manufactures over 100 types of cartridges for hunting, sport shooting, and law enforcement. A couple of years ago, Frank was manning his station as a third-line inspector, the last step in a meticulous quality control process. Defective bullets at Worthington are measured in parts per billion, thanks to that three-tiered inspection system, and to the fear of a legal liability should one of their cartridges explode in a policeman's face. Nonetheless, there was a bad bullet among the 500,000 38 caliber rounds produced that day at Worthington, thanks to a fly that crawled inside one of the casings as it passed from the machine that added its pinch of propellant. The defective fly bullet was the only one that day to pass by both of the first two inspection stations unnoticed. Frank would have spotted it, but at the exact moment the possible defect error displayed on his screen, Frank was distracted by a man behind him. Or so he thought. He turned and saw no one. When he satisfied himself that he had imagined the spoken hey that, upon reflection, he heard more in his head than with his ears, he returned to his work and was none the wiser. The defective round, thus passed unnoticed, was packaged, sold through a law enforcement catalog 8 months later, and finally distributed to Detective Lawrence Morgan Freeman Appleton 6 months after that. A year later, Freeman loaded said cartridge into his revolver and fired it into my chest. The projectile had only a fraction of the normal propellant and thus less than one-tenth of its usual impact force. The bullet had punched through my skin, scratched the thick bone over my heart, and bounced off. I opened my eyes, didn't remember blacking out again. So tired. Waiting for the flames now. I raised my head and saw the couch was a bonfire, black smoke rolling up to the ceiling. Fire licked the paneling and it bubbled and blackened under its touch. The carpet below the couch was saturated with high octane. The moment a spark fell, it would... I was moving, just like that, crawling on hands and knees. Damn. Smoke filling in so fast now, like breathing wads of hot cigarette butts. Gotta get to the door, gotta get to the door. Can't see shit. I saw something that looked like a door, reached out, touched smooth metal. Refrigerator. I had crawled in the exact wrong direction. I turned, crawled, felt along the wall. Carpet on fire now. Shit, hot as hell in here. I crawled, crawled, and crawled. Ah, here's the door. Thank God. I reached out. Refrigerator again. My skin burned, pulled tight on my skull. The place was an oven, a blast furnace. Is that my hair burning? I squinted around. The living room was an orange blur behind me. Could I even make it through there now? I felt this weird twitching in my chest and realized I was coughing. I lowered my head to the linoleum, hoping to find a few inches of fresh air down there. So tired. I closed my eyes. People die. This is the fact the world desperately hides from us from birth. Long after you find out the truth about sex and Santa Claus, this other myth endures. This one about how you'll always get rescued at the last second, and if not, your death will at least mean something, and there'll be somebody there to hold your hand and cry over you. All of society is built to prop up that lie, the whole world a big, noisy puppet show meant to distract us from the fact that at the end, you'll die, and you'll probably be alone. I was lucky. I learned this a long time ago in a tiny, stifling room behind my high school gym. Most people don't realize it until they're laying face down on the pavement somewhere, gasping for their last breath. Only then do they realize that life is a flickering candle we all carry around. A gust of wind, a meaningless accident, a microsecond of carelessness, and it's out. Forever. And no one cares. You kick and scream and cry out into the darkness, and no answer comes. You rage against the unfathomable injustice, and two blocks away some guy watches a baseball game and scratches his balls. Scientists talk about dark matter, the invisible, mysterious substance that occupies the space between stars. Dark matter makes up 99.99% of the universe, and they don't know what it is. Well, I know. It's apathy. That's the truth of it. Pile together everything we know and care about in the universe, and it will still be nothing more than a tiny speck in the middle of a vast black ocean of who gives a fuck.
I realized the heat was gone. The sound was gone. Everything was gone. Just darkness. That wasn't right. Darkness would have been something. This wasn't even that. Was I dead? It was the same detached sensation from before, the feeling of floating across worlds without my body. Only there was nothing to see here, nothing to feel, only...
I was being watched. I knew it. I could sense it. There were eyes on me. Not eyes. One eye. A single reptilian blue eye. I couldn't see it. There was no seeing here. There was just the awareness of it. I was in the presence of something. An intelligence. I recognized it, and it recognized me back. Not in the way a man sees and knows another man. It was the way a man sees a cell under a microscope. To this thing, I was the cell, insignificant under its vast, unfathomable perception. I tried to sense the nature of it. Was it good? Evil? Indifferent? With my mind, I reached out and... run. I ran. I had no legs, but I ran. I pushed myself away, willed myself to escape from this thing. Run. I sensed heat. I was pushing myself toward an unimaginable heat, but I welcomed it. I would throw myself into a lake of fire to escape that thing in the... darkness. Regular darkness now, the familiar backside of my own eyelids. Heat all around me. Heat so intense I could barely recognize the sensation. A low sound. Wailing? From outside. Getting louder. A car coming. A dog barking. Get back. Get back. Who said that? A thunderous, terrible noise. Glass shattering. Metal screaming. Wood snapping. The kitchen was exploding around me. I was flung backward and suddenly a blast of fresh air washed over my body. I was looking at the grill of a car. My car. The Hyundai H symbol a foot from my face. The car reversed itself and wrenched free of the wreckage that had been the kitchen's west wall. There was now a rupture near the floor, frayed with tufts of pink insulation and shredded aluminum siding. I rolled myself out of the hole, fell hard onto the cool grass outside. I coughed. 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 Passed out. I woke up what felt like hours later. Or maybe seconds. The trailer was a fireball behind me. I was too wiped out to appreciate that I had avoided death twice within a few minutes, first by a fraction of an inch, then by a few smoke-filled breaths. I heard a bark. David, you live? That voice again from nowhere. I struggled to my feet, saw my car sitting about 20 feet away. Molly the dog was sitting behind the wheel. I stared at this for a good solid minute. She barked, and again I heard words in the sound. John's voice. I didn't think it could get any stupider than the bratwurst thing, but I suspect that I was about to find out otherwise. I climbed into the car, pushing Molly over to the passenger seat. Molly looked at me with concern. No, not Molly. John looked back at me with Molly's big brown eyes. Molly barked, but I heard, "We're in big fucking trouble, Dave." "No shit, Fluffy. How did you work the pedals?" "Woof. Listen. There are three people still alive from last night other than me. Big Jim Sullivan, Jennifer Lopez, and Fred Chu. I don't know a whole lot else because my own body ain't working so well. I know we're all together, and we're on the move, and once we get where we're going, something bad, bad, bad is gonna happen."
"Wait, wait, wait. Why are you a dog again, John?"
"Arroof!" Sneeze. "Justin White, or the thing that used to be Justin, he's got me. My body, I mean. He stole a vehicle. When I'm in my body, I can't see nothing, but I can hear. It's something big enough to hold all of us, some kind of truck. Dave, you gotta find it."
"Is it an ambulance? The cop told me he stole an ambulance from the hospital. So there are actually four still alive from last night, if you count Justin."
"Whoa.
No, no, no. I said there were three that were alive, and I meant it. Justin White ain't alive. He's a walking... hive, or whatever.
Those things inside him, what are they?"
"Woof! Bitch!"
This threw me, and I stared in dull confusion for a moment before I noticed the dog was looking past me. I turned and saw a little brown and white beagle tied up next to one of the trailers.
"John?"
"Woof! Sorry, Dave. My grandpa used to tell me toward the end when he was going crazy that talking through a dog ain't like talking through a sausage. Molly is in here with me, and I gotta compete for the Barker. Where is Justin, or this Justin thing, taking everybody? I already knew the answer as soon as the question left my mouth. I said it along with the dog's bark. Las Vegas. So what's in Las Vegas?
Woof, aroof, grrr.
You know that Bugs Bunny cartoon where they spill the ink on the floor and then climb through it as if it was a hole? I think that's what the soy sauce is like. It's a hole, it opens you right up. Those worms and the other shit in Robert's basement, the sauce let that stuff come into our world by turning people into holes. And I think if the sauce infects enough people in one place, it can make one single big-ass hole. Shit. Is it worth asking what's going to come through the hole?
Woof.
I don't know. But what comes through it will have to feed. I nodded. Right. And Vegas has all those free buffets. Molly closed her eyes in frustration. I'd never seen that expression on a dog before. No. Listen, there's a guy named Albert Marconi. He does these conferences on the occult. He's having one there at the Luxor. That's the big casino shaped like a black pyramid. We're going to go there. Wait, how do you know this? Because it's already happened. That doesn't make any woof. Cat, 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 cat. Molly was up on the seat, jamming her head out the half-open passenger window. John.
Woof, 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 woof.
Cat, 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 cat. A filthy gray cat zipped across the trailer park, across the front of the car, and off into the distance. Molly pulled her head inside and tromped over to the driver's side window, stomping on my crotch and shouting, cat, the whole way. It took 10 minutes to get the dog calmed down, at which point she promptly curled up and went to sleep in the passenger seat. John? The dog farted. I got nothing else out of her the rest of the night. Chapter 5. Riding with Shitload. I drove to a convenience store and bought a road atlas. Back in my car, I unfolded it in my lap and drew out the path to Las Vegas with an ink pen. Was I actually doing this? I knew I would need cash for gas and to replace the several vital parts of the Hyundai's drivetrain that would likely shatter over the course of the long drive. I had nothing in the bank. This seemed to be a rather major problem, but within a few seconds of watching the sunset in the convenience store's parking lot, a plan popped into my head, fully formed and alien. I had learned to accept such things in the last few hours. This wasn't Dave thinking. This was the soy sauce thinking. I drove downtown, scanning the alleys until I saw a rail-thin Mexican kid standing by a dumpster wearing a St. Louis Rams jacket. The kid was wearing the jacket, not the dumpster. I calmly stepped out of my Hyundai, smiled broadly at him. I'd never met him before. I had no idea what I was doing. Without hesitation, I heard myself say, "Yo! Mikey said you got a package for me." What the fuck? The kid squinted at me, didn't move. "Who the fuck are you?" The kid moved slightly, the bottom of his Rams jacket sliding up his skeletal frame. The gun sticking out of the kid's jeans was black and sleek, looking like something that could shoot lasers. The irony that he was able to afford a nicer gun than the undisclosed police department gave Detective Freeman would have amused me if I wasn't busy picturing the kid pumping 6 bullets into my forehead with it. Again, I heard myself speaking, a single word that to me had no meaning. Creech. My soy-sauced brain had officially taken off without me. I was operating on autopilot, phrases and words scrolling up into my mind as if fed to me on a teleprompter. The kid said nothing. He reached into his jacket and pulled out an envelope. He stepped up and gave me a hug, slipping the envelope to me in one smooth, practiced motion. As the kid turned away, I slowly let out the breath I had been holding. I would like to reiterate, what the fuck? Back in the car, I pulled the envelope out, opened it, saw it was stuffed full of $100 bills. I had no idea what any of that was, only that speaking those words to that person would get me cash, like a complicated pin at an ATM machine. I counted $6,000. All righty. Without knowing my destination, I drove directly to the Merry Nation Bar and Grill 6 blocks away. I went to the parking lot and glanced around, still without any real idea of what I was looking for. I went right up to a cobalt blue Dodge pickup that I had never seen in my life. I found it unlocked, reached in, felt around under the seat. I pulled out a satin-finished steel automatic handgun. Fully loaded. God bless America. I stuck the gun in the back of my pants, felt strangely comforted by its gouge into the small of my back as I sat back down in the Hyundai. Evening had set in now, on one of the longest, most retarded days of my life. I was about to point the car west, then realized I didn't want to drive for over 1,500 miles, 1,669, in these shit-stained pants and blood-stained shirt. I drove home to change, proving that even on the soy sauce, part of me was still a dumbass. I threw the clothes in the trash and showered, paranoid the whole time, thinking I was hearing opening doors and floor creaks and murderous things bumping around outside the shower curtain. It had been that kind of a day. I dressed and put on Band-Aids, collected my toothbrush and a comb and contact lens fluid and dumped it into my leather duffel bag. I flung myself down the hall. I stopped cold. My bag fell from my hand with a soft thud. A teenager stood there, right in the middle of my living room, a space that had been proudly teenager-free for years. Braces. Black Limp Bizkit t-shirt. I said, "Justin?" Standing there with a shit-eating grin on its face, the thing that had been Justin opened its mouth and emitted a rumbling sound, like something boiling up from his lungs. After a moment, he closed it again. He gathered himself and said brightly, "Why are you frontin' here? You know what time it is. Stop calling me Justin like nothing's changed, yo." I pictured swarms of white worms twitching through his bloodstream, and suddenly had to fight the impulse to run away screaming like a toddler. I took a step back. Justin took a step forward. Buying time, I asked, "What should I call you?" I shifted my feet, felt the nudge of the gun against my lower back. I had never fired a gun before, and certainly never fired one at a man. The thought brought cool sweat to my forehead and a hot, jittery anticipation. Not entirely unpleasant. I had felt it before. Justin's mouth opened again, struggling to speak words completely foreign to itself. "Shitload. Know why? It's because there's a shitload of us in here. Now, here's what's going to happen." The left side of Justin's scalp disappeared in a spray of pink brain matter. He was thrown backward, my finger squeezing the trigger as fast as it could twitch, the sound shattering the air. Little sprays of blood flicked out from Justin's chest and thighs and gut, shots landing and backing him across the room. "Jesus, Dave." I had drawn the gun in a mindless reflex, like slapping at a mosquito bite. I tasted blood where I bit through my lip. I felt electricity inside, the buzz of the violence, sparks raining down inside my skull as if from a blown fuse. Too familiar. Shitload stumbled backward one last time and fell against a wall, but kept his feet. I pulled the trigger again. Click. I squeezed the trigger about 20 more times just to be sure there wasn't another shot hiding in there somewhere. Shitload righted himself, looked down at his wounds, sighed like a man who has dropped his pie in his lap. "Oh, you've got to be shitting me." I saw now that the white rods were binding up each of his wounds, forming a stitching like the backside of fiberglass. I finally realized I wasn't fighting this kid. I was fighting those things. The fear was like lead weights in my chest. He said, "Man, your little nine is useless against—" His words were cut off when the empty gun I hurled at him smacked off his cheek, knocking him backward once more. He brought a hand to his face. "Stop that shit! Don't you know we got the same plan?" He took a step toward me. I looked across the room. The door, the window. I couldn't make it to either without going through shitload. He said, "We're both going to Vegas, right? Y'all packed up and all?" My hand at my side, I made a fist. I don't think so." I realized once more that I was about to enter a fight, and again had learned no fighting skills since the last one. Only this time there was a good chance the fight would end with me feeling the opponent's teeth ripping out my eyeballs. "Sure you is." He lunged. I threw a flailing punch that missed by a foot. The Justin monster fired out a low punch, the impact exploding in my groin. I doubled over, struggling to keep my feet. "The only difference is..." He advanced, and in a blur threw three more punches that each landed solidly on my balls. A heavy sickness bloomed in my gut, and I fell back against a chair. I awkwardly kicked at his chest. He caught the leg and delivered an expert crotch kick that finished me. "I'm doing the driving." Justin clasped both of his hands into one fist, raised it high above his head as if in victory, and then with all his might brought it down on my groin. I blacked out.
Darkness, barking, and footsteps. I felt Molly's wet nose on my forehead, then felt her walking over me. All four paws managed to hit my aching crotch on the way over. I felt the floor moving against me and realized I was being dragged. I was hefted over a shoulder like a sack of dog food and dropped onto a metal floor. A door clanged shut, a latch clicked into place. In the haze, I felt the presence of others around me, could sense terrified thoughts darting around their minds like flies. I could sense the sauce in them, the soy sauce. I could smell it on their thoughts like alcohol on a wino's breath. Vegas. I had a hallucination, or a vision. It was the road atlas spread before me, the red highways tangled like arteries across the country. Undisclosed on the right, Las Vegas a red dot on the left, the line of an ink pen scratched along the highways joining the two. We were going there because he wanted us there, not this Justin monster either. Who? The soy sauce? Again, I felt the presence of it in this space, pulsing, a will of its own. The soy sauce was alive, I knew that. But beyond it, too, there was someone else, something else, and every dark thing I had run into was working on its behalf. In my vision, the map rustled. The red spot marking Las Vegas pulsed, as if something was pushing it from behind, scratching, like an animal trying to gnaw its way through. My eyes snapped open. I was expecting to find myself inside Justin's stolen ambulance. Instead, I saw cardboard boxes stacked around me, each bearing liquor logos. There was a sweet, spoiled smell of ancient spilt beer around me. Sitting on one stack was Big Jim Sullivan, copper hair capping 275 pounds of bulk. You should call home, Jim. Cucumber is worried about you. Next to Jim was a very pale and shaky Jennifer Lopez, scratched and dirty, wearing the same outfit from the party. Lying across a row of green Heineken cases was a little wiry man with shoulder-length hair and a goatee, whom I had never seen before and who, by process of elimination, had to be Fred Chu. He had his tattooed arms folded under his head and looked unharmed. Molly went and sat down in the middle of them, bored. On the sight of me, Fred Chu said, "Shit." Jennifer buried her head in her hands and began weeping softly. Jim said, "Hey, you found Molly." The engine started and we jolted into motion. I raised my head and looked around the dim cargo area. Among the crude beer case furniture the passengers had stacked for themselves was a low, unoccupied seat of boxes in the corner, as if they had known I was coming. For some reason, this annoyed me so much I almost failed to notice that sitting in the corner, cross-legged and wearing hospital pajamas, was John. He stared intently at the wall, not blinking. Big Jim said, "We're moving again." He reached down and stroked Molly. I sat up. Big Jim turned his eyes on me, said, "We heard the shots. Are you the one who heard him?" "I saw his head." I was aiming at his heart, but yeah, I did get him. Jennifer sobbed the word, "Good." An empty, flat, bitter sound. Jim turned toward the others and said, "Okay, we got one more hostage. We can still make it, guys. Just gotta believe, that's all." I pretended not to hear this, concentrated on not puking from my ball of trauma. I asked Jen, "Are you okay?" Jen nodded. "Where's he taking us?" "Las Vegas." That drew stares from around the room. "No, seriously." Fred Chu said, "The rest of us are fine, by the way. But you gotta understand what's happening here. The guy who attacked you, he ain't no fucking man, okay? He's been invaded by fucking body snatchers or whatever." "Yeah, I mean, if you saw what happened to Shelby, the Jamaican guy spat acid on her hand. The muscle and bone fell apart, just like dripped off like fucking wax." I thought of the ache in my groin, realized I had gotten off easy. Jim said, "Justin is, or those things inside Justin are evil. And I mean that as a noun, not an adjective. They're the kind of physical manifestation that could only have been spawned by the devil himself." "I don't completely disagree with that." "Now, we've been praying," continued Jim, "all of us in a circle. Fred, Jen, and me, even John, as best we could involve him. I had to threaten to beat them first, but they joined in eventually. We prayed for someone to come along, to save us from whatever dark thing is up there behind the wheel, and then you showed up like an answer. Now you faced that thing, you stood up to it, you've been delivered to us, to be the voice to answer a question I've put to God over and over since this whole thing started. How do we kill it?
No, Jim, that's not the question. The question is, can it be killed at all?
I pictured the map, and the rabid thing trying to claw through. I realized the scale was all wrong. To this thing, whatever it was, the real Las Vegas, the whole Earth, all of mankind, was as insignificant as the red dot on the map. I pictured a blue, knowing eye in the darkness. But that's still the wrong question, isn't it? Maybe Justin can be killed, maybe not, and maybe it doesn't mean a fucking thing. I looked toward John. He should be the one doing the talking. He's been waiting his whole life for something like this, just to prove the universe is as retarded as he's always pictured it in his head. I needed John to be here, alive and unafraid. I needed him to be John. I turned toward him and said, "Wake up." Nothing. I looked back at Molly, then nudged John with my foot. "Wake up. Wake up, asshole." More nothing. I felt eyes on me, resisted the urge to punch John right in his stupid catatonic face. "Look, we fucking need you. Now wake up." "Hey." A soft voice from behind me. I turned and Jennifer Lopez's wet eyes met mine. There was sympathy there, and I felt a tug from inside, though that could have been one of my testicles detaching from the trauma. "Calm down, okay? You're not helping." Molly stirred, looked around lazily, and then trotted over to John's frozen body. I stepped back as she nuzzled him, then flinched when I saw his hand reach over to pet her. There was a jolt through John's body like an electrical shock, so fast that we could barely process the change in posture. Suddenly he was on his feet, confused, looking at his hands like he was surprised to have them. Looking up, he seemed to see us for the first time and said to no one in particular, "I had a really vivid dream that I was a dog." It took John a while to come around. He knew we were in a beer truck piloted by some kind of infested evil, but seemed to have trouble adjusting to actually existing inside his body, in one physical location. "I've got such a headache." He searched his pockets, said, "Anybody have any smokes I could borrow?" No one did. John took the empty seat, then turned his eyes on me and said, "Let's, start over. How many people do you see in here?"
"What?
Just humor me." Jim said,
"I know what he's asking. They can make you see what they want you to see. John wants to make sure we can all trust our eyes, right?"
Going around the room, I pointed out the four other residents of Undisclosed, who had the misfortune of depending on John and me for their lives. Five, if you counted Jennifer's boobs separately, as I suddenly had the impulse to. Goddamn testosterone. John nodded, seeming somewhat relieved. "Good. And yeah, like Jim said, I just wanted to make sure I wasn't projecting, I guess. You know what I'm saying, Dave? Like that cop at the police station, the one who wasn't really there. I wasn't in the room, but I remember it anyway, and he looked like a stereotypical cop, like a generic, standard issue, an extra in a movie." Jim nodded again, and I wondered how much of this same shit he had been through himself. He said,
"Hollywood raised us. Your mind processes the world through a filter formed by comic books and action movies on Cinemax. That's why kids put on trench coats and take guns to school. The devil knows how to control us."
Jim seemed to be seizing on the opportunity to bring Satan in a conversation where nobody could counter him with rationalism. Devils and angels seemed pretty plausible in this context, and Jim intended to ride that horse hard. John said,
"People who wake up in the middle of the night and see those big-eyed alien abductors or a ghostly old woman, it's always something they saw in some movie, isn't it? Your mind puts a familiar face on something it can't understand, only here somehow it becomes real, at least to you."
We rode in silence, I think all of us wondering what was behind the flowery wallpaper our perceptions had always pasted on the unknown. All the things the mind won't allow us to see, to protect our sanity, or our soul. Or maybe just to keep the shit out of our pants. Fred spoke first, breaking the silence.
"Well, fuck 'em. That's what I say." Jennifer said,
I took a cinema class at the community college last semester. Most of the films were in French and were about people making out in coffee shops or in apartments over coffee shops. But I don't even have a TV anymore, so that might help. I closed my eyes and sighed, wishing Jim would pray for longer attention spans. Okay, I said. Let's set that aside, because at the moment we're not talking about ghost stories or vampires. That thing up there in the cockpit is real. Real as any of us. Crotch-punchingly real. And it can make us really dead. Now, do you guys understand what it wants with us? Fred said, Man, I think he's going to make a fucking suit of human skin using the best parts from each of us. Holy crap, said John. He'll be gorgeous. I sighed again, rubbed my forehead with both hands. There was a very real chance that the conversation had taken a turn that would allow John to talk about his dick, which was a subject it could take hours, if not the better part of days, to come back from. Nipping it in the bud, I said, No, it's none of that. Look, you know the story of the Trojan horse? A few soldiers get inside the enemy camp riding in this big horse statue. Then at night, they sneak out of the horse and let the rest of their army in the front gates. Well, that drug the Jamaican was on, it let something through. He became the horse. And those things, those white flying wormy things, they came through. Now they're in Justin, and now he's looking to open the gate and let their buddies in. This brought silence. I scanned the cartons around us, the vague outlines of a plan forming in my head. Fred said, Dude, how could you possibly know that? I pieced it together through inductive reasoning and information relayed to me by John when he was talking to me through the dog. Long story. Okay. Fred said, accepting it readily. I sensed that I was in the presence of the king of the go-with-the-flow types. But why us?
Because we were chosen, Jim answered. Called. And that's all that matters.
We were chosen, all right, Jim, but not by God, unless God is a black liquid in a silver jar. Hell, maybe he is. I locked eyes with Jim. I thought of his sister saying the Jamaican had showed up at their house. Jim at the party, talking to Robert. He was right there from the beginning. And he fucking knows more than he's letting on. Did he light the fuse on this whole situation somehow? Guys like him, the ones who grip the Bible so tight they leave fingernail grooves, they're the ones who are the most scared of their dark side, always going too far the other way, fighting for the Lord, often just because it gives them an excuse to fight. Fred nodded and said, So what you're saying is, if we all die, that's not even the worst-case scenario? John replied, I'd still like to shoot a little higher than that, Freddy. I looked over his shoulder and scanned the cardboard boxes stacked up against the back wall of the truck. I thought for a moment, then asked John, How much alcohol does liquor have to have in it before it will burn? A couple of hours later, we had a dozen full bottles lined up near the rear door, each with a bundle of wet cloth cut from Fred's flannel shirt jutting 6 inches out of the opening. When the Justin monster finally stopped, we'd wait for him to open that door and light his ass up. But the truck didn't stop. For hours, we rode in useless silence, slumped against the metal walls, drifting in and out of fitful sleep. John found a little vented slit in the side of the cargo hold, and we took turns watching the world flow by outside. The wait was hell. Sunday morning turned to Sunday afternoon. We pissed in empty bottles, though I can't remember exactly how Jennifer pulled that off. The view out of the little vent turned from cornfield to desert, as hundreds and hundreds of miles of highway skimmed by under us. 28 hours, 19 minutes. That's how long we were in the truck, all told. We found a case of Evian water at the back of the truck, but our only source of calories came from warm beer, a diet for which John needed no adjustment at all. Finally, we slowed, taking multiple turns as if having entered a town. Each of us sprang up, moving to the back of the truck. We started gathering up bottles. The truck stopped. We all held our breath. But then it started off again, in a different direction. We had our plan, or, considering that the plan had come from me, we had given up and were waiting to die. Big Jim glanced around at us and said in a low, solemn voice, Listen now. Because when that thing opens the door, some of us may die. And at that point, you may have a chance to run, to get away, to save yourself. But we have to stay and finish the job. Do you understand? We nodded.
Again, I was hit with the sense that he comprehended a danger far larger than the rest of us did. He continued,
I don't think you do understand, but...
He swallowed.
You guys know my sister, who's back home at this moment, in that big old house. Well, we've always had a mouse problem. And, you know, we work hard to keep the place up, to keep it clean since our parents passed away. But you can't keep the mice away. They get everywhere. The cabinets, the walls. I got poison set out all over the place for these things.
Fred pulled out a cigarette lighter, flicked it once to make sure it worked. Jim stared at the floor and continued.
Then one day I look under her bed and she's got a little saucer there with bread on it. The bread's all chewed off at the corners. She put it there on purpose.
The truck turned again. We heard the crackle of gravel under the tires now. Jim looked up at us again, a kind of pleading in his eyes.
Do you understand? She was feeding them. The whole time I was trying to kill them, she was trying to keep them alive.
I pictured her back there, small and alone in that cavernous house. And I did understand. Jim fucking knew something was coming on its way to this world, through Las Vegas for whatever fucking reason. He knew what was at stake while the whole world, vulnerable and unaware, went about its business behind us. I just wished he would use his sister's damn name so I wouldn't have to keep thinking of her as Cucumber.
John, Fred, you guys. If one of you makes it out of this instead of me, I just want you to promise me something. I want you to look in on her. Just make sure she's taken care of, okay? She's smart, you know. I don't mean she's... It's just she ain't never been on her own. I want you to promise me.
The truck turned again, slowing. John said,
Of course, man.
I thought of John's last pet, a little terrier dog that jumped out of his third-floor apartment window and died while he played video games on the couch. Yeah, Cucumber will be in good hands, Big Jim.
John flicked his lighter. The truck turned for the last time, then slowed to a stop.
I couldn't breathe.
John peered through the vent, trying to see where we were. He said,
If I die, I want you to tell everybody I died in the coolest way possible.
Dave, you can have my CDs. My brother will demand the PlayStation, since I borrowed it from him a year ago, so don't fight him for it.
Jennifer hesitated for a long moment before whispering, there's a loose floorboard under my bed. I keep stuff down there. There's some pot and a little notebook with, like, some guys' names in it and some other stuff. If I die, I want one of you to go in my bedroom and get all that stuff out so my mom doesn't find it.
John reached over and lit the wicks on all three of the Molotov cocktails I held. His hand was steady.
Mine were not.
Fred whispered,
Okay. If I don't come back and say they don't got my body, like if Justin eats me or something, tell everybody you don't know what happened. Make it mysterious. And then a year later, spread rumors that you see me wandering around town. That way I'll be like fucking Bigfoot, everybody claiming to have seen me here and there. Legend of Red Chu.
John nodded, as if he were committing this to memory.
He lit his own firebombs, glanced up at me, and asked,
You got any final requests in case this doesn't end well?
Yeah. Avenge my death. We were positioned in a circle by the front door, each with a high-proof cocktail in each hand. I studied the small orange and blue flame dancing on the bundle of wet cloth crammed into the bottle. My heart hammered. Molly whimpered behind me. The moments oozed out like ketchup from a glass bottle. I could hear Jim breathing next to me, felt a trickle of sweat roll down my temple. The latch clicked and scraped. Every muscle in my body tensed. I looked down and squeezed the beer bottle in my hand.
Jesus, we are going to die. We are actually going to die here.
The door slowly ground up in its tracks. A band of pale moonlight appeared at the floor, a stiff wind whistling in as the door slid upward. There he was, revealed from the shins up, jeans and shirt and...
Oh, holy shit!
Justin looked mostly normal, skin pale under the moonlight, blonde hair rustling in the stiff breeze, a pimple on his chin. Only now both of his eyes were protruding, about 6 inches from his skull. The pupils at the end of their new white and pink stalks twisted horribly in our direction, staring at us for a very long and terrible moment. We were so caught off guard by this that it killed our momentum, all of us frozen and expecting the person next to them to make the first move. To Jennifer's credit, She broke the paralysis by weakly tossing a flaming bottle at Justin. The Justin monster watched it as it missed and bounced harmlessly to the ground, rolling to a stop. The wick flickered,